Well, hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And today on the podcast, we are interviewing Kiran Krishnan. He is a medical microbiome expert. He's a renowned research microbiologist with 17 years of experience dealing with microbiome, diet, and nutrition. He's been a researcher in molecular biology and microbiology at the University of Iowa, and he's done over 50 private label nutritional products. And I'm so excited because he's going to teach us how our biology, our bacterial biology, impacts our brain health, our skin health, our body health, and our GI health, right?
Wow. Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, Dr. K. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, we did a panel together at the Aesthetic Show a couple of years back, and I thought you were such a great speaker and very eloquent. So I'm excited for you to teach me and my audience. What do we need to know about the microbiome?
Yeah, well, you know, to define the microbiome for the audience, the microbiome is defined as the totality of microbes and all their genetic elements as it relates to the host. And of course, we are the host. Now that genetic elements part to me is actually a really critical part, because when we look at our system, right, we all know that we have genes within our cells and our chromosomes, and genes dictate a lot of what happens to us and how we function and so on. But what's interesting is that the human, his system only has about 22,000 genes. It may sound like a lot if you're not familiar with genetics, but keep in mind that an earthworm has about 30,000 genes. So we are less sophisticated than an earthworm is in terms of our genetic capability. So then how are we so sophisticated, right? How are we at the top of the food chain and top of the evolutionary ladder? Well, as it turns out, we have trillions of microbes that live in and on us that also contain genetic elements, and which actually account for about 2.5 million genes just from the microbes themselves. So a huge percentage of the genes that we utilize to make proteins and effectuate change in biochemistry in the body, a lot of that comes from the actual microbes, or this microbiome, if you will, which means that the microbiome has a big impact on our outcomes, on what our skin looks like, what our gut functions like, what our immune system looks like. Even do we see the glass half empty or half full? Are we optimistic or are we pessimistic? Microbes can control those kind of thoughts in our body and in our brain a lot from the genes that they carry and the things that they express. So the microbiome, we can't ignore it. It's really the advent of future medicine.
That's crazy. So it's going to affect our mental status, our stress and anxiety levels, and if we're an optimist or a pessimist, based on what bacteria is in my GI tract.
That's exactly right. Yeah. How your body handles stress is largely dependent on the presence of certain organisms. We now call these organisms psychobiotics because they have a direct impact on the brain. So just to give an example, people who experience stress, which is all of us, right? We all experience some sort of daily stressor. Your body is supposed to go through a series of flight or fight responses. So the activation of the HPA axis, right? So the hypothalamus, the pituitary, the adrenal axis, they activate. They release cortisol as a result of that activation. Cortisol being the stress hormone, gets your body prepared for flight or fight. Mm-hmm. Again, this is your body thinking that, hey, I might be in danger, right? This is an age-old response to protect our species from things that could potentially kill us. Now, these days, we experience the same response from a tweet or a message, or somebody cuts us off in traffic. It's not life-threatening, but the biochemistry is the same, right? So being able to go up that cortisol curve, elicit a flight or fight response, but then come down from it once the danger is subsided, that's really the crux of where these psychobiotics play. If you're missing certain organisms within your gut, what tends to happen is you start to go up the cortisol curve. So you're going through this fight or fight response. And then what happens is your gut becomes leaky and becomes more inflamed. There's an element that goes up during that inflammation, a cytokine called IL-6. IL-6 re-triggers your HPA axis as if you're going through another stressor. So you keep going up the cortisol and you stay in this fight state throughout the day. It's very hard to come down from it. Being able to come down from it is dictated by microbes. So just there alone, right? It shows us how the presence of certain microbes and their ability to bring down that neurological inflammation when you're in a flight or fight state is critically important to how you manage stress on a day-to-day basis.
Interesting. So interesting. What are some common misconceptions that modern America has about bacteria in the gut and probiotics? I mean, we see a lot of probiotics advertised and sold, but are we buying pills that are just full of dead bacteria that are not going to help us?
Right. Unfortunately, the vast majority of probiotics that people have access to are just kind of what I call kitchen sink formulas. Not a lot has been put into it, right? It's really about more. It's really about more strains, more CFU count, which is the potency count that they use on the probiotics, whether it's 50 billion cells, 100 billion cells, or so on. The old thinking was that the more is just better. However, what we know is that the vast majority of those microbes are going to go are going to die through the gastric system, right? The stomach acid is really, really potent. It's a great way of killing bacteria. So the vast majority of those microbes are dying anyway. So you have a lot of just microbial debris through the system. So when you're looking at probiotics, what you really need is are probiotics that are heavily focused on strains that have studies, and not mixing in a bunch of strains that have not been tested together. Because we've actually found in some of the research work we've done that some strains can just function. You could have a very effective strain by itself, but you add another strain to it because these are biological entities and could do contradicting functions in the body. They could actually negate each other's ability to function. And so what we really need are clinically studied probiotics on the finished formula. And then we need probiotics that are either going to survive through the gastric system, or if they don't survive, there has to be evidence that they can work when they're dead, right? So it's really important that people focus in on things that have the research behind it, that are supported by doctors, that are used by clinicians, versus most of the junk that you can get out there in health food stores and so on.
Do you believe in the stool testing? And is this something that we all need to be doing as adults right now to give a stool specimen and have it analyzed for what is our microbiome spectrum and is it good or bad? We should be doing that.
Yeah. You know, I think that can easily be blown out of proportion for its utility, right? I think that there are certain basic things that everybody needs to be doing to improve their microbiome. So things like diversifying your diet, right? We know that the more diversity there is in the diet, the more diverse your gut microbiome is, and the healthier you are in general. In fact, diversity in the microbiome is a very good predictor of longevity and resilience to chronic disease. There's lots and lots of longitudinal studies that have shown that. So we want to eat lots of diverse foods. We also know that fiber is incredibly important for overall health and longevity. In fact, there was a meta-analysis study that was published, which incorporated almost more patients than almost any other meta-analysis study there was. I think the patient numbers are in the millions at this point on fiber, long-term fiber studies. What they concluded was for every 10 grams of fiber you add to your diet each day, you actually reduce your mortality rate by almost 10%. Wow. Right. And as you age, which is so significant, then the question becomes, well, why is fiber so effective? Well, one of the reasons it's so effective is because there are beneficial bacteria in your gut that convert that fiber into really important compounds called short chain fatty acids. So things like butyrate, acetate, propionate, these compounds are really strong anti-inflammatory compounds. They support the healing of the lining of the gut. They support the immune system. They improve metabolism. They allow for blood sugar control. They impact the skin quite a bit. We did a probiotic acne study. We did the largest probiotic acne study that we published. And that study was really based on increasing one of those short chain fatty acids called acetate. And what we showed is that when you increase acetate production in the gut, that acetate makes its way to the skin. And what it does is it reduces sebum production and also reduces inflammation in the pores that are often driven by too much bacteria called Cutibacterium acnesis. So we were able to bring down inflammatory and non-inflammatory lesions by 75% in a 12-week period, along like most other antibiotics in that space that have the same kind of functionality. And we improved digestive health and immune health at the same time. Right. And a lot of that comes from good bacteria metabolizing fiber, right? So we know that from a dietary perspective, having a diverse diet, having an increase in fiber has a huge impact on your microbiome. And then that beneficial microbiome converts those foods to very beneficial and helpful compounds as well.
That's amazing. If there were like top five foods that you would want to eat every day, or I imagine you probably do that since you're so into microbiome science, what are your top five fibers and fruits and vegetables that you're into?
Yeah, and I think you mentioned something critical there, fruits and vegetables. So the top five would be getting an increased amount of soluble fiber. Right. So a lot of the studies on fiber focus on the soluble fiber aspect of it. The soluble fibers you can get from almost any kind of fruit or vegetable. So I really like things like carrots, broccoli, because broccoli, for example, has fiber, but also has compounds like sulforaphane that would detoxification that help boost the immune system as well. I like high resistant starch foods. So things like sweet potatoes or potatoes that are twice cooked. So some of that heat and cooling will increase the resistant starches in that. I really love plantains and cassava, for example. Those have lots of resistant starches, which are some of the very important soluble fibers that are found in fruits, and any sort of root and tuber, right? So if you Google roots and tubers that are really good for you, you'll find lots and lots of options in there that really, really provide really high quality fiber. Now, on top of that, polyphenols are very important prebiotics for the beneficial microbes in the system. There are microbes in your system that are called keystone species. These microbes are inversely correlated with chronic disease, meaning the more of these microbes you have, the lower your risk of many different types of chronic disease. So example of that, Acromantia mucinophila. Acromantia mucinophila is a keystone species that protects against metabolic syndrome. So if you have high levels of Acromantia, you tend to be lean, you have really good blood sugar control, really low inflammation, low risk for things like diabetes and cardiovascular disease. If you have Calambacter prausnitzii or good levels of it, you're protecting inflammatory bowel conditions, right? Crohn's, colitis, microcolitis, and so on. So to increase the keystone species, they really polyphenols and these types of fibers, the resistant starches I talked about. Now, polyphenols are the colored fruits and vegetables, right? So berries provide some of the best sources of polyphenols. So anything in the berry family, blackberries, blueberries, cherries, and so on. You'll hear online, a lot of health gurus are like, oh my God, be careful of fruits. They're sugar bombs and so on. All of that is completely out of context, right? Mm-hmm. I would be much more worried of somebody eating a candy bar as a sugar bomb than a berry or a cherry, right? And the studies are clear on dietary impact of overall health, that a high fruit, high vegetable diet, and then lean proteins from fish, meat, and so on, a balanced diet is really the way to go. And all of those affect your microbiome significantly.
So when they've done studies that show that, you know, certain mice that have a certain type of bacteria in their colon are obese, and the skinny mice have the other type of bacteria, are there now studies that show that in humans as well?
So there's actually studies on what we call discordant twins. So these are twins that are identical. So they're the exact same genetics. They were raised in the same household. However, one of the twins is obese and the other one is lean, right? So then they're trying to figure out what's the difference between the two. They're eating the same food. They raised in the same household and they have exactly the same genetics. So what is the difference? So then they started these studies by taking mice that are called nobiotic mice. These are mice that are raised with no microbiome. So you can implant microbiomes in them and see what the effect is. So then they'll take the microbiome from the obese twin and put it in one of the groups of mice. And then they'll take the microbiome from the lean twin and put it in the other group of identical mice. And they'll feed all the mice the exact same diet over the exact same period of time. The ones with the obese twin's microbiome always gain weight. And the ones with the lean twin's microbiome always stay lean. Mm-hmm. And then they can switch it. Mm-hmm. They can take the obese mice that are now obese and put the lean twin's microbiome in and vice versa. And then the obese mice will start to lose weight and the lean mice will start to gain weight, right? So what that showed over a number of studies, this was over a 7-8 year period where they did lots of these kind of studies. What that basically shows is that the microbiome does have an influence on your metabolic process, and that weight gain and struggling with weight may not just be an issue of willpower and so on, there are some people that have a pro-obese system in their gut. So we took that information and we actually did and published a study on humans, a double-blind placebo control study. I had this idea, what we call metabolic reprogramming. The idea was, can we take somebody that has struggled with weight, make a small shift in their microbiome using a probiotic and prebiotic, and then have them do no exercise, no dietary changes, so they're still eating the same stuff, and would they actually lose fat and lose weight? So we did a 12-week study where we took people who are overweight, we split them into two groups, one got placebo, the other one got a probiotic with the prebiotic, and the purpose of the probiotic and prebiotic was to do a couple of things. Number one was to increase short-chain fatty acid production, butyrate in particular. The second one was to increase the amount of bifidobacteria that are endogenously going in these individuals. And the third thing was to increase acromantia, right? So that's the function of the probiotic and the prebiotic in these individuals. And so over that 12-week period, the people, the overweight people, got the probiotic and the prebiotic. Remember, they didn't do any exercise. They didn't do any diet. They lost 35% visceral fat mass. Right? Wow. 35%. That's a huge loss, right? And you know better than anyone else that that visceral fat is really, really dangerous fat. It's a metabolically active fat that produces lots of inflammation and creates lots of problems. That's a fat around the organ system. 35% visceral fat mass loss through DEXA analysis that we did. They lost weight. They improved blood sugar control. All of these things happened. We're basically programming their metabolism that even though they didn't improve their diet, they still started seeing benefits. So we know that if you make the right changes within your microbiome and then you add diet and exercise to that, your effects are going to be far more profound than just trying the diet and exercise alone.
That's such a miraculous thing. Like, when are they going to have that as a capsule so we can all just get the best microbiome going on and not have to start
so we did. We through that company, I was with Microbiome Labs. I had founded Microbiome Labs in 2013 and built up all the microbiome therapeutics through that company. I ended up selling Microbiome Labs out there. So the product that we use for that particular study is a probiotic called Megasporebiotic, and the prebiotic is called Megapre. So we just gave the individuals the probiotic and prebiotic each day, no other changes, and it created a significant metabolic response in them. And it's a published study that people can go out there and look.
That's pretty impressive. I love that idea. Now, you did mention the antibiotics when we were chatting earlier. So I'm just curious, like, your take on that. Like, occasionally you get a sinus infection and bronchitis, you have to go on antibiotics. It's like a curse of the modern world, a blessing and a curse. What do you do right after a course of antibiotics to reset your body? And, you know, why do dermatologists prescribe chronic antibiotics for acne patients if they're killing off the important microbiome? Just curious.
Yeah. That was the key motivation for us to do that probiotic acne study, right? Because in my view, when you look at 130 days of antibiotics to improve pimples, we've got to have a better way of doing that. And that's why we said, well, let's look at a probiotic and modulating the gut to affect the skin in a positive way. And sure enough, that probiotic study showed that you can reduce acne lesions as much as antibiotics do without affecting anything in a negative way. In fact, improving digestive health and all that. So antibiotics, like you said, are a necessary evil. There's absolutely times when you need them. I myself have taken many courses of antibiotics throughout my life for sinus infections and other things. But the good news is you can do things while you're on the antibiotic. And then of course, after you're off the antibiotic to improve your microbiome. The good thing about the microbiome is it's an ecosystem, right? It's not that you hit it once with something bad, like an antibiotic that could harm it, and then it's messed up forever. It's an ecosystem. So like a garden, if you do the right things, you can go out there and you can reestablish it in a positive way. So what are some of the things you'd want to do? Well, while you're on the antibiotic, you absolutely need a probiotic that works in the presence of the antibiotic. So a lot of doctors will use things like Florastor, which is a Saccharomyces boulardii, right? So it's a fungal yeast probiotic. And so it's resistant to the effects of the antibiotic. So it still has that modulatory effect on the gut, supporting the beneficial bacteria, even when you're taking the antibiotic itself. So I would absolutely take a probiotic like that during the course of the antibiotics. At Microbiome Labs, we had created a product called Restore Flora, which is a combination of Saccharomyces boulardii and Bacillus spores, because Bacillus spores also work well during the course of the antibiotics. You also want to make sure you're getting prebiotics as a supplement. I like oligosaccharide prebiotics. So these are fructooligosaccharides, galactooligosaccharides, xylooligosaccharides. These are very specialized prebiotics that feed just the beneficial bacteria in the gut. You need to take them as a supplement. It's hard to get them out of the diet because you have to eat very specific amounts of the fiber and all that, which is just impossible to monitor. So I like to get 3 to 4 grams of a prebiotic powder each day. That's the same prebiotic that we use in the weight loss study. So it's called Mega Pre. And then I would also make sure we are getting adequate fiber in the diet. You want to look at your fiber intake. Google how much fiber does a plantain have? How much fiber does a sweet potato have? And make sure you get about 50 grams of fiber a day while you're on the antibiotic. Now, when you're off the antibiotic, you want to keep up with all the same things, but keep diversifying your diet and increasing your fiber intake. If you can get to 60, 70 grams of fiber a day, you're doing an amazing job. If you do that for 2 or 3 times longer than you took the course of antibiotics, including the Saccharomyces or the spore combination and the prebiotic, you can absolutely negate a lot of the negative effects of the antibiotic. So you can get the benefits out of the antibiotic from controlling whatever infection you're dealing with, and you don't have to suffer the negative effects. If you do take the antibiotic without taking specific action, studies show that even a 7-day course of clindamycin can negatively impact your microbiome for up to 2 years. It can still be detected in your system, right? So it's really important. And I do want to go back, and this is where it becomes relevant. You had asked a question about stool testing, and is that useful, right? I would say that we put a lot of utility into it that still isn't quite there. It's really hard to look at your stool and then go, I'm going to adjust my whole life and supplementation and all that around this test. The way I look at stool tests is that if you have a health issue, that you've already done the basics, right? So you're improving your diet, you're taking a good probiotic, you're getting your fiber in, you're getting your sleep, your exercise, you're doing all the basics and you're still not getting better, that may be an opportunity to take a stool test and go, okay, is there something I'm missing that is quite specific that's happening in my microbiome that I can then utilize as a potential healing opportunity? I wouldn't necessarily do it upfront. I would use it as a tool, especially if the basics haven't really helped you yet.
Interesting. And if someone is on chronic antibiotics, like for our acne patients that they get put on daily doses of doxycycline, these are the best things they should be doing, taking like the mega probiotic and also adjusting their fiber content of the diet. That's the only thing they can do, really. You mentioned that you have a product that's like a serum microbiome product. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, you know, I worked on the gut microbiome for almost a decade, and we published a lot of studies and developed a lot of therapeutics. So then I became very interested in all other biomes, and the skin microbiome is a very interesting one. When you think about the skin microbiome, you've got very complex ecosystem throughout the body. So if you look at your face and neck, for example, which are sebaceous tissues, right? So you've got very different microbes on the face and the neck than you do on your arms, for example, or your legs, which are much drier areas of your body. You've got a lot more diversity on your arms and your legs than you do on your face. Your face tends to have a lot more anaerobic environments because you produce so much oil. There are lots of crevices and all that. The pores are bigger, so you get more microbes that form in pores, and then you cover the pores with oil and so on. So now you have anaerobic environments, meaning there's no oxygen. So there's certain bacteria that do really well in a environment of high lipids and anaerobic environment that don't do well if there's a lot of oxygen and there's lower lipid. So those microbes tend to be the ones that predominate the face. One of them is called Cutibacterium acnesis. And we know that in a certain percentage of inflammatory acne it's driven by an overgrowth of that Cutibacterium agonensis and its ability to trigger inflammatory immune responses, increase sebum production, and so on. Then I started looking into, well, are there good studies showing the impact of the microbiome on the skin to age-related dysfunction that we all concerned about, right? So thinning and dryness of the skin. So loss of that ceramide layer in the skin, right? Or dismantling of the ceramide structure, collagen and elastin dysfunction. So fine lines and wrinkles, hyperpigmentation, senescent cells, you know, your melanocytes becoming senescent, all of these things that occur as we age that we're all working hard to prevent. And you do many beautiful techniques to help people with a lot of that. My concern was, what are the microbes doing on the skin that may drive that or prevent that? As it turns out, there's this long-term study called the Baltimore Longitudinal Study on Aging that also looked at this as one of the factors of aging. And what they found was that aged skin was one of the best predictors of mortality and morbidity in individuals. They took individuals in their 30s, right? And this was surprising. And it's not for the reason we think. We all think that aged skin is a reflection of an unhealthy, right? And you go, okay, so if their skin is aged, it must mean that their insides are unhealthy, thereby they're more at risk for disease. In fact, what they found was that aged skin can drive osteoporosis. Aged skin can drive heart disease. Aged skin can drive Alzheimer's, right? How is that? How is it that wrinkles and dryness and thinning of the skin can drive a condition like osteoporosis? Well, as it turns out, when your skin ages, you lose the barrier function of the skin, right? Yeah. We know that the skin is a very important barrier. And so they started measuring the barrier function of the skin and how that relates to systemic inflammation inside the body, right? So when you lose the barrier function of the skin, not only are you losing moisture out, so the skin is drying, you're also leaching in lots of toxins from the environment, and you're getting a lot of dysbiotic bacteria that colonize on your skin and produce toxins that cause systemic inflammation. The inflammation starts in the dermis layer, but then it quickly translates to the rest of the body as well as it moves into the lymph nodes and so on, right? So now you can get brain inflammation from having wrinkled skin, right? Jesus. And that is just an amazing connection. It's mind-blowing, right?
Yeah. When you say it drives, when you say that those skin aging changes drive these disease processes, like, you know, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, whatever your things that you're mentioning, how does it drive it? Like, how do they even correlate that?
Yeah. So it's largely driven by a couple of things. One is, in the case of Alzheimer's or neuroinflammatory conditions, you can get an overgrowth of fungus on the skin. And that fungus can drive inflammation in the neurons as it makes its way into your body through your nose, your sinus cavities, your eyes, and so on, right? So if you get an overgrowth of fungus on the skin, it can do that. But the biggest driver is the loss of barrier function of the skin can create both localized and systemic inflammation. And we know that inflammation, chronic low-grade inflammation, is the biggest driver of chronic disease, right? That's heart disease, that's diabetes, that's dementia. These are all conditions that are associated with chronic low-grade inflammation. The gut becomes a big source of chronic low-grade inflammation when you have intestinal permeability. But as it turns out, skin permeability can also drive chronic low-grade inflammation. So what we look at as we become concerned with aging of the skin, we're looking at it from an aesthetic perspective, that we don't want our skin to look dry or thin or be hyperpigmented or have dysfunctional pigment. We also don't want it to have fine lines and wrinkles. But now we now understand that that actually is not only a cosmetic or aesthetic problem, it's also a chronic disease issue. And so what we started doing is looking at, okay, how can we continue to rebalance the microbes on the skin, the microbes that provide resilience against aging and resilience against things like inflammatory conditions, right? So for example, when you age, one of the hallmarks of the changes of the ecosystem on the skin is you start to reduce a type of bacteria called propionibacteria and you increase corneum bacteria. right? So we started looking at people with hyperpigmentation and thin and dry skin, and we see high levels of corneum bacteria and low levels of propionic bacteria. We put this serum on them for about 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks. We did different time periods. We start to see a visual change in the skin, but upon swabbing the skin, we start to see a regeneration, a reemersion of the propionic bacteria and a reduction of the corneum bacteria. We did the same thing with acne, right? So people with massive amounts of inflammatory lesions on their foreheads and around their cheeks and all that, when you swab their skin, you will inevitably find very high levels of cutibacterium acnesis and low levels of staph epidermidis and so on, right? Beneficial bacteria. So then we're using the serum, which is once a day, a biome balancing serum, and I'll talk about how it actually works. What happens is within about 2 weeks, you see a dramatic shift in the microbes on the skin. You see that cutibacterium levels coming down dramatically, and then staph epidermidis and all that going up. And then, of course, the lesions start to come down as a result of it. So what we're showing is that you can actually affect the microbes on the skin, and then the skin quality issues will follow as a result of that, right? So this is the first biome balancing serum. It's called SIV, S-I-V, that we launched. And this is actually probiotic spores. We don't call it a probiotic because you cannot verify that it functions as a probiotic on the skin, but these are quorum sensing bacteria. What they do, which is so interesting, is that they get on the skin. And then one of the things that they do is they elicit the immune system to respond to the dysfunctional bacteria. They also can produce antimicrobial counts as a result of being present among those microbes, and they'll utilize things down the microbes. So where we are supposed to encounter this process naturally is we're supposed to encounter it in the dirt, right? Where people used to take mud baths and things that are known to be good for the skin, right? We know that being out in nature and being engaged in nature is good for the skin, good for your overall health and all that. In part, what drives that is this engagement with certain types of environmental bacteria that end up being transient on your skin. They'll get on your skin, they'll affect the microbial change, and then they'll leave the skin after a few days. So that's exactly what's in here. These are transient beneficial bacteria for the skin that can shift your skin microbiome. So we're super excited about that. It launched in October, and we've sold out of it four times, which is great. That's a good problem to have.
Good. That's amazing. I can't wait to try some of that. I'm just still mind blown. I mean, it makes so much sense. The skin is your biggest organ, right? Like, and of course, it's going to allow some permeability of toxins, bacteria, and inflammatory responses. So, but I mean, this whole concept of like wanting to look youthful forever, the fountain of youth, is really also about you look good on the outside, you are good on the inside. It's such a correlation and reflection. Do you think that some of the things that we're doing to the skin for aesthetic purposes can be damaging to the skin microbiome? Like right now we're putting radio frequency heat needles into micro needling the skin. Am I drying up the pores? Are we ruining the microbiome by doing that? Or is that just temporary nuclear blowout of all the bacterial colonies there?
Yeah. So I actually think many of those procedures are probably less harmful to the skin microbiome than daily practices of using things like certain types of cosmetics, cleansers, or fragrant substances, right? So if you think about, if you look at your personal care product line that's sitting in your bathroom, many of those will have antimicrobials and so on in it as preservatives, especially if they're water-based things, right? And so those will have more of a negative impact on your microbiome. Now, as you may be able to using those things, right? It's not like we can just cut out all the cosmetics we use, and we can't cut out all the makeup and things like that that we use that may be harmful to the microbiome. So the reality of it is that we're going to be doing things harming the skin microbiome. So it's really important to do things that reaffirm and reestablish the skin microbiome regularly as well, right? So I think some of the microderms, all of those things may have an impact, but they're not done very frequently. And the skin microbiome can bounce back pretty quickly if you have a pretty resilient skin microbiome. But I think it's more the daily over cleansing, over washing, use of cosmetics, those types of things that really haven't been tested on the skin microbiome that could have more of a deleterious effect. And I think that's where it becomes really important to be cognizant of what can we do to keep rebalancing the skin microbiome, right? Because it's just, it's not real to forego all of those things, right? We need those to look good and feel good and so on. So that's our goal, is like, that's why we want to do serums and things that you can add into your routine. If you can clean up some of the products that you use, perfectly great, right? There are more makeup products and all that coming out that are cleaner with ingredients, that have better ingredients for the foundation or the colorants and all that they use. So as the movement moves that way of kind of cleaning up some of these personal care products, I think that's a fantastic thing. Reducing paraben exposure is going to be great for the skin, because that has an impact on the microbiome, for example. As we improve those, we want to continuously reaffirm and reestablish a resilient skin microbiome. And that's where things like the serum comes in handy.
I think that would be so fascinating to do some studies that looked at interventions and what happens to the microbiome before and after, whether it's Botox or injection of hyaluronic gel fillers, like these sugar molecules, do they disrupt skin microbiome? Lasers, microneedles, and peels, like how fascinating to maybe break that down into a study and look at before and after of how the biome changes. Because we do think that microneedling improves the skin. Maybe it's driving in the immune response cells and increased circulation and blood flow. But I would be so curious for you. You and I have to team up. We have to do something like that.
We absolutely do. In fact, I hypothesize that, and we have a couple of aesthetic practices throughout the country that use the sieve as a post microderm or chemical peel treatment, because it's like, okay, if we're going to slough off or create stress on a layer of the skin, and the stressor is there to create a response, right, from the immune system, from circulation and so on, can we also add this as a way of recovering the skin even better?
Exactly. From that stressor, you do this barrier disruption, like this is going to be maybe repopulating with the right bacteria, whereas you blasted the bad bacteria out of there. That would be great to do.
Yeah, I would love to work with you on that. I think it takes a doctor like yourself to really dig into that deeply with a giant microbiome nerd like myself. I think we'd make a good team, and we might find new things, right? That could be really novel.
Okay, we're going to definitely do something really cool with that. I love that idea. And then I think also this whole concept of, do we need to get back in the mud and get down and dirty and wash our faces less, and then, rub cheek to cheek with some handsome fellow that has really good skin? Am I going to get the probiotics from the people I surround myself with? Am I going to share bacteria? I know there was one study, you told me this, that having a pet improves your microbiome diversity by up to 30%, because you get to share some of those puppy kisses.
Yep, absolutely. In fact, it goes both ways, right? So surrounding yourself with people that are healthy, that are conscious of their health, and then having close contact with them can absolutely improve your microbiome, your microbiome of your skin, your gut, and so on. We know, for example, one of the most important things you can do for a baby that's newly born is the skin-to-skin contact. Right? Part of that skin-to-skin contact is the transfer of beneficial microbes to the baby's skin, which is changing its ecosystem, right? The baby just came out of the vaginal canal. It got a bunch of mom's vaginal bacteria, but now it needs to adapt towards environmental and skin microbes, which are completely different than vaginal bacteria. So that skin-to-skin contact is really important for the baby's development. We see that even in adulthood, but you see the opposite as well. There was a fascinating study out of Johns Hopkins that followed individuals that were given a course of antibiotics, and they looked at their microbiome, the gut microbiome, before the antibiotics, throughout the course of antibiotics, and then up to, I think it was 6 months after they stopped the antibiotics. And what they found was, of course, there was severe disruption to the gut microbiome during the course of antibiotics, but they were able to detect that same disruption upwards of 6 months after. But here's where it was really fascinating. They also followed the microbiomes of individuals that lived in the same household with that individual, but those other individuals weren't taking the antibiotics, and they saw the same kind of disruption. Right? So living with somebody on an antibiotic can disrupt your own gut microbiome, because we all live within a microbiome cloud. Our households, our offices, the places we spend the most time with, we're constantly shedding bacteria into this environment. As an example, if you look at your skin, for every skin cell, you've got 35 bacteria on each skin cell, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of what we see as dust and all that in the environment are shedded skin cells from the human. And so you've got 35 times that bacteria. So if somebody is has unhealthy skin microbiome and is shedding a lot of Staph aureus into the environment, the other people are picking up that Staph aureus, right? And so by the same token, if you're shedding a lot of Staph epidermidis and propionibacterium bacterium and all these beneficial bacteria, the other people are picking them up as well. So it's really important, I think, twofold, to think about who you surround yourself with, and their health practices and how conscious they are, but also doing these types of things as a community, right? Encouraging the household to think about their entire household microbiome, rather than just one person in the house is heavily focused on health and the other people are just doing whatever they want. You're going to be taking two steps forward and one step back constantly. So there's a community component that I think is really important here.
Are there any skincare ingredients that you think putting on every day fosters the growth besides the, of course, the serum with the microbiome? I mean, we mm-hmm. are advocating the use of retin A and vitamin C and sunscreen. Like, are these things going to be impactful either positively or negatively?
I think positively, anytime you're utilizing carotenoids, or antioxidants on the skin, it's going to be beneficial for the skin microbiome and the skin in general, right? I think one of the selection criteria that happens on the skin in terms of which microbes do better is the level of oxidative stress on the skin. Mm-hmm. One of the ways in which the beneficial microbes try to combat the dysfunctional microbes is by producing things that quench reactive oxygen species or even enzymes that may break down prooxidants, right, on the skin itself. So having good antioxidants or carotenoids as a topical use product can be really beneficial to the skin microbiome. There is some evidence that use of CLA, conjugated linoleic acids, can improve the skin microbiome. So certain types of fatty acids can be really beneficial. I think squalane can be really beneficial as well. Caprylic acid can be beneficial to the skin microbiome and just the skin in general. I think steroids can negatively impact the skin microbiome. We know that steroids negatively impact the gut microbiome, and steroids have a capability of attenuating growth of microbes wherever they are. So if people have eczema, right, and they're constantly using steroids to try to reduce the inflammation, the eczema never actually gets better. In fact, they become that part of the skin thins out over time, right? And becomes more and more susceptible over time and loses resilience, in part because I think you're really damaging the microbiome in that area. I think most vitamins are probably perfectly fine for the skin. Mm-hmm. I think ones that may dry out a lot, like retinol, I think if you get to a certain point where your skin is getting very red and sensitive and dried, then I think you may be going too far and it may be damaging the microbes. But up to that point, I think it's perfectly fine. So those are some of the things. I think the parabens and the antimicrobials, the preservatives, are probably some of the worst things for the skin microbiome when you look at personal care products in general.
Definitely so. And then in terms of like coconut oil, olive oil, baby oil, oils that people are adding, you mentioned squalene is good. Kind of the triple lipid creams, I imagine, are beneficial because they help restore the ceramides and the skin barrier. Do you have any other favorite oils that you think are great for drier, aging skin concerns?
Yeah, I think extra virgin olive oil, I think, is actually really quite good. In fact, if you're going to use a personal lubricant, that's one I would use as well. A lot of people end up using coconut oil, but coconut oil has a lot of medium chain and long chain fatty acids that are very strong antimicrobials. Mm. So coconut can actually kill bacteria. In fact, in oral studies, coconut oil consumption drives leaky gut more than any other oil.
Really?
Because it kills a lot of microbes, right? So it causes a lot of die-off, and it can kill beneficial bacteria in that same sense and release a lot of endotoxins as a result of killing the bacteria. So I would say on your skin, especially if you're non-equatorial, so if you think of your people from Northern Europe or Europe in general, they've never naturally encountered a coconut, right? People like me that grew up in India and in Southeast Asia around the equator, we use coconut for everything. So I think our biomes are more adapted to the effects of coconut. But if you take a Northern European and you slather a bunch of coconut oil on them, I think it can have a very negative effect on their microbiome. It's just their microbiome is just not used to that. But extra virgin olive oil, I think, is fantastic. In part because the oil itself is beneficial, but then also all of the polyphenols that are in extra virgin olive oil, right? Those polyphenols are really powerful antioxidants. And I think antioxidants in general become a really beneficial thing for both the skin and the skin microbiome.
Amazing. And how about for hair and hair follicle health? Have you
Yeah.
any good insights about probiotics for hair thinning, hair fall, hair growth?
Yeah, you know what's interesting? So we actually we have a lot of people that use this on their hair itself, right? So
Okay.
it's so on the face, it's actually just one drop on each side of the face once a day. Super simple. You do it after you wash your face and before you put on a moisturizer. We have a lot of people with either alopecia areata or dry scalp. So they have dandruff, dry scalp, irritated scalp-like issues, and they put a few drops in kind of in the roots and rub it in, and they use it for that. And it dramatically helps with the scalp as well, because many of these scalp related issues tend to be an overgrowth of fungus or mold, right, on there. And so this combats that mold growth, which can be really beneficial. Now, outside of that, if you look at a supplement like Nutrafol that has some good studies on improving hair growth and reducing follicle shrinking, how is it that those things work well? Well, they work well because a large amount of antioxidants and polyphenols that are in there, that are in that supplement product itself. So I think it comes back to the fruits, the vegetables, the polyphenols, carotenoids, and antioxidants that you find in those types of fruits and vegetables. And I think if you use those topically, they're also beneficial, but certainly digesting them internally and reducing oxidative stress throughout the body can be really, really beneficial.
Well, this has been so interesting. I really feel like you've provided the audience with so much info about the microbiome and the importance of it, and so much more than just, having yogurt with probiotic every day.
Right.
We really have the technology now to drive your microbiome in the direction that you want it to go for overall health. Where can people find you and the Civ microbiome product?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I try to engage with people as much as I can on Instagram to help them understand where to look for information. My handle is Kiran Biome, KiranBiome. And to learn more about the Civ, you can look at civcare.com. So it's SIVCARE. That's the Instagram handle for Civ. And you can also, of course, access the product there through the link tree that's on there. It's been on the market now for almost 4 months, and we're getting great results. We work a lot with estheticians, medical aesthetic spas, doctors. It's a product that, because it affects the microbiome of the skin, it takes a little bit more understanding around the science of it for people to actually use it well in practice. But we have a lot of consumers that are pretty knowledgeable about skin that have been trying it and giving us some amazing feedback. So if you try it, please get us some feedback. We learn from everyone's use, and sometimes it may cause us to improve the product, think of a study that we want to do, and so on. So it's really great to get the feedback from people. So we appreciate that if you do.
Well, thanks so much, Kieran, for coming on. I hope everybody will check it out and take care of your microbiome. It is like an internal treasure, internal and external, both. Well, guys, that's it for now. Thanks so much for tuning in. And you can find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, DrKay. And our website is the same. It's beautybydrk.com with lots of those amazing antioxidants and nutrients for your skin, including our Diamond Line Refine, which is our Retin-A and our Vitamin C serum. You're going to love, love, love that. That's it for now, guys. Stay healthy and beautiful.